Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
I try to be positive. I try to celebrate wins. You know, sometimes I think that the nature of my title allows me to say, hey, that was an incredible job. You know, we got great GAs and graduate assistants. They need to hear that's a great job. You guys did great last weekend at the tailgate, or, you know, somebody has a meeting with a recruit or whatever it is, our academic advisor. Sometimes I can step in coach's behalf and communicate that messaging in a way where it still feels real and authentic. And if it needs to go to another level, I say, hey, coach, make sure the nutritionist knows, like, she's doing a great job.
All right. Welcome, everybody, tuning in on the live stream, on the podcast, and here on the Zoom with us tonight. You are listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. My name is Adam Gordon. And before we get into tonight's show, which is going to be a great one, day three of the Science of Basketball, starting off with Adele Harris from Vanderbilt Basketball, and then getting into some great panels later on. Tonight's portion of the Science of Basketball Conference is brought to you by Fulcrum Tech, the best video editor in basketball. You guys have all used different video editors throughout your careers. There's one company in particular that has really had a monopoly on video editing for sports programs, especially in basketball, and that is no longer the case. Fulcrum Tech can do more than any editor in the platform and in basketball technology, and is at a fraction of the cost. Check them out, Fulcrum Tech. Fulcrum, T-E-C, no H at the end, .com, and follow them on social media at Fulcrum Tech. Tonight's host, Brian Bender of Southwest Mississippi Community College, will be kicking us off. Coach Bender, take it away.
Adam, thanks for the introduction. I appreciate you pawning this podcast off to me. So here we go. We'll jump right in. So we got a special guest. He mentioned her before, but Adele Harris, she's the chief of staff at Vanderbilt for the men's basketball program there. Coach Harris, how are we doing?
Tremendous. Tremendous, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Now, when we spoke earlier, you said you're no longer called Coach Harris. You're called Chief now. You're called Chief. Do you like your new title?
I love my new title. I love my new title. It was my idea. I actually created it. That's how great my boss is. He said, create your own title and your own job description. And he approved it and we rolled with it. So here we are, Chief of Staff, Vanderbilt Men's Basketball.
That's awesome. First chief of staff in basketball. And so how'd you get to this moment? So, you know, you go take us back, you know, years ago, you know, maybe from childhood or your playing days or from, you know, when you got into coaching, and kind of talk us through with your journey, especially starting on the women's side all the way to being at Vanderbilt.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you and Adam asking me to be a part of what you guys are doing. I think it's incredible. Personal development, professional development. You know, you can't have enough of it. And this job never demands it. It's always optional. You know, it's one of those things you jump in here and you learn on the fly. You need these platforms and opportunities. And so love what you guys are about and love what you're doing. So thanks for having me. The question, you know, my basketball journey, like most people, started when they were young. I fell in love with the game of basketball when I was 8 years old, following my older brother around with his friends. And he's 4 years older than me. So I started playing against guys who were 4 years older than me when I was 8 years old, and never knew I was good until I made my middle school basketball team. I remember being very, very nervous trying out for my middle school basketball team because I had never played against girls before. So I didn't know if they were as good as the guys. I quickly found out that was not the case. And so just a junkie from the beginning, loved everything about it, studied everything about it. I think I've always been a coach. I was the weird 12-year-old that recorded every Final Four game and knew what Billy Packer said. And I listened to it over and over and over again and had dreams of playing at Wake Forest University. And I don't know how I manifested those dreams still today, but I am a 2002 graduate of Wake Forest, got a scholarship to play right near my hometown of High Point, North Carolina. Wake Forest is in Winston-Salem, so about 30 minutes from my house. And if you know anything about the state of North Carolina, you know there's an Interstate 40 that runs right through the state. I actually could jump on Interstate 40 from right here in Nashville, Tennessee, but runs right through the state from west to east. And there's about 22 Division I schools 30 minutes, 45 minutes off of any exit. But it's the only place in the country, I don't know if you know this, Brian, that has four Power Five schools within a hour and a half drive. Right. So to grow up in a space that Wake Forest, Duke, NC State and Carolina are right there, the access to all of the information, the news, the newspapers, the culture that I grew up in was it definitely helped nurture my dreams. And so part of the reason I'm here today is because of that, that infrastructure. It's just very, very solid and strong. And then started my college coaching career right out of, actually, I started coaching AAU basketball. I was an AAU head coach. As soon as I got done with my high school career, I started coaching a 10 and under AAU team. I had that AAU team my whole time through college. So like I said, I went to college at Wake Forest, 30 minutes from my house. So I'd come back and coach my team in the summer and run practices. And that had a lot to do with my development, you know, as you can probably imagine. But being a head coach at the age of 18, 19, 20 years old, huge advantage for me. And graduated college in 02, got my first coaching opportunity at UNC Asheville. And in 2003, I was there 6 years, got that job making $16,000 a year. I was the happiest I've ever been in my life. And six great years there under Betsy Blose, my first head coach, my first example of what being a college head coach was all about, and took a very, very bad program and got into the NCAA tournament. So I had an NCAA tournament experience for the first time in my life. And I would have never left Asheville, but life was telling me there was a ceiling there and I needed to challenge myself to grow and evolve. And so I had a scenario situation that occurred in my personal life that challenged me. And as I put it in writing, you know, you're a head coach, start acting like it. This was 2 years before I actually became a head coach, but I started writing it down. And then I told my boss, I walked into her office at the end of my 6 year at UNC Asheville, said, I'm going to leave here. And I'm going to go be a head coach. And I don't know if it's going to be JUCO, NAIA, D3, D2, but I just know that that's the next step for me. And so fortunate to get a Division II job right down the road from Asheville in Greenville, Tennessee at Tusculum College. I spent three great years at Tusculum College, inherited an incredible, that's the trick in coaching. You inherit great talent and then you look really, really good. And so I inherited the second best player in school history was a rising junior when I was hired. They had just come off multiple NCAA tournament appearances, conference championships, top 25 in the country. So they allowed me to make a lot of mistakes as a first-time head coach. And we had great success in 3 years. And then I got my first Division I head coaching job at UNC Wilmington. In Wilmington, North Carolina, I was there 6 years and resigned and wanted to really pivot and do something totally different, go into public speaking. I want to be a full-time author. I want to travel around the world and share this message of making adversity your advantage and doing something, again, different, communicating messages of inspiration, not to young athletes anymore, but everybody. And God saw something else. And so Jerry Stackhouse got hired at Vanderbilt in the spring of 2019 and contacted me shortly thereafter and asked me to be a part of what he was doing and said he needed a head coach in the office. That was one of the statements that I remember connecting. I need someone who can be the head coach in the office. So I gladly serve him and serve our staff and our student athletes and love the opportunity to be at Vanderbilt and, you know, competing in the SEC and, you know, love all elements of it.
That is awesome. Now, your story is very unique and you gave us a lot of really good points throughout the thing. And I just want to touch on a couple before we move into the next question. The one, to challenge yourself to think like a head coach. And myself as a head coach now, I work for a guy that challenged me every day to think like that. And I think that's something as an assistant or a manager, a GA, video, whatever role you have in basketball, if you can think like a head coach and, you know, find ways to take things off your head coach's plate, things like that are make you a great asset to any program. And the other part that you said, you know, when you can become a head coach at any age or any level, whether it's AAU, high school, summer league, different, anything that you can come be a part of, getting those reps, just like a player, getting those reps as a coach where you're making decisions, having the primary voice in a practice or in a game, making decisions. That stuff happens fast and you grow exponentially doing those things. So I think those are, anybody listening or wants to get into coaching, you ever get a chance to be a head coach at a young age, especially go and be a head coach regardless of level. Because if you figure out and you can make mistakes, especially even those lower levels, like you said, you got to grow. Well, it's not Wake Forest where you're on TV every night. You know, you're able to make those mistakes and grow from them and be able to continue to develop. So you mentioned something about wanting, you know, shifted your gears and you wanted to become an author. And so maybe you talk a little bit about, hey, what have you written? And how did that parlay you into becoming the chief of staff at Vanderbilt?
Yeah. So for a long time, when I got the job, the head coaching job at Tusculum College, I was really, really into personal development and reading. I was reading everything all the time. YouTube came out in 2005. And so I went on YouTube and start seeing these interviews of people, coaches. Lou Holtz was the first coach I studied on YouTube. But, you know, get these interviews and they start talking about books they're reading. So I go buy these books. And so I fell in love with that medium of learning. It connected so strongly with me. I early on was like, I want to write a book one day. I want to write a personal development book. I want to inspire people through words, through my experiences and the things I've learned. And I was finally able to kind of focus on that when I walked away from being the head coach at UNC Wilmington in 2017. And I wrote three books. Two of them are eBooks. One of them is a published book through a third party. But the first book I wrote was a book for high school kids called Signed, right? Whatever, 23 essential steps to get signed. So I'm sharing everything about social media and, you know, what to say on your unofficial visits and how to, you know, what to say on your official visits and how you put yourself in the best situation. So I wrote that ebook. I did some conferences with some young folks, enjoyed it, loved it, and thought, man, I should probably add some value to the other demographic of people who could benefit from my journey as well. So wrote another ebook called Dear Assistant Coach. And this is where Coach Stackhouse and I met, essentially. I did not know Coach before. He is a great, you know, great North Carolina resident off Tobacco Road, another North Carolina legend. I'm not going to talk about the hoop state too much here because this is not about that. But North Carolina is the hoop state. But Coach was following some tweets I had put out about Dear Assistant Coach. The ebook started with some tweets. I woke up every morning and was like, I'm gonna send out 20 tweets, hashtag Dear Assistant Coach, dot, 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 dot. How to talk to your boss about a raise. How to deal with players that come to you with something that's happening that you need to take to your coach, or things that I just wish maybe somebody would have taught me. Things that I felt like, you know, coming just out of being a head coach, I could really add more value. So I turned those tweets into a 52-page ebook. During the time I was sending those tweets, about 10 to 15 a day for, it must have been like 10 straight days, Jerry Stackhouse starts following me. A lot of people start following me, but I recognized when Jerry Stackhouse starts following me. This is almost probably 3 years ago exactly. I put the book out, I launch it like in February of 2019. The second person to purchase the book is Jerry Stackhouse. Everybody who purchased the book, I DM them on Twitter. Hey, you know, thanks for your purchase. Tell me what you think about the book, because I really wanted feedback. What was connecting? What wasn't? What can I sell and market to other people? Seemed like it was doing really well. Obviously, if an NBA assistant coach at the time, Coach Stackhouse was an assistant for the Memphis Grizzlies. And so, you know, if it's adding value to him, surely, you know, these guys that I really thought my audience was, I was really targeting, you know, women's basketball coaches that are in the early parts of their career. And I said, well, tell me, would you mind telling me your biggest takeaways? You know, what did you like about it? It's like, man, I love this book. Every coach should have it. Right now I'm reading like, you know, page 20. You know, he was able to really tell me what he was reading. And so I'm like, wow, this is good. Great. Thanks, Coach. I really appreciate that. Again, this is in February. In April, Coach is announced as the head coach at Vanderbilt. So I just retweeted the announcement off the Vanderbilt men's basketball page. Congratulations, Coach Stackhouse. You know, he likes it, double taps the heart. I'm like, okay, he still knows me. You know, like we're still Twitter friends. That's awesome. It's probably 7 days later, he DMs me and says, I've been thinking about you. And at the time, I actually was at the Women's Final Four in Tampa in 2019. I've been thinking about you. We set up a time to talk, got on a call, and he's telling me he wants me to be Wendy Rhodes. And Wendy Rhodes is a character on the show Billions. I do not know if anybody's seen Billions. At the time, I had never seen Billions. So he's telling me, Wendy Rhodes, I need a Wendy Rhodes. I'm like, okay, well, coach, I don't know who Wendy Rhodes is, so let me go find out. Because the last thing I want to do is jump into your dream, your vision. You think I'm something that I am not, right? And so we get off the phone. I said, let me get home. Let me get the free 7-day subscription of Showtime. And let me watch couple seasons of Billions. And so I understand who Wendy Rhodes is. She's kind of his person in the office that kind of runs the show. She's also a personal development consultant to a certain degree with all of the hedge firm guys and the guys trying to, you know, really wrapped up in the money made in the show. But long story short, I watched it. I could tell he was trying to communicate the demeanor, disposition, maybe the confidence and certainty to manage people. And then he had also given me, you know, what he really enjoyed about the book and thought, you know, you must have a knowledge of how people in this space should be. And I texted him, I said, I can do it. I can do that. And he doesn't offer you a whole lot of words. He sends me an emoji, 100 emoji, praying hands. And 4 days later, I'm in Nashville.
Pretty special journey. It started with your ideas. You know, it started with your ideas.
I always tell people, please pursue your good ideas. Yep. Please pursue your good ideas. I was writing that ebook for something totally different. You know, I wasn't writing it for this, but I knew I wanted to. The urgency in trying to get it done and get it out there. And so anyway, I would say that. Please pursue your good ideas.
Yeah, being the fastest learner, you talked about reading in your first segment and then just there, you know, producing materials, being a fastest learner in any room, regardless of what you're doing, you can learn from anybody and everybody. And you had an intention of who you were reaching out to, you know, your target audience. And, you know, you reached someone that you didn't even know and it turned into it's a nice job. Oh, great job.
Oh, come on now. It's incredible job. Right? You know, somebody grew up loving the game, you know, and here I am. And I walked away from it. Like I left coaching thinking I would, you know, like this is an incredible opportunity for me in so many ways, right? Intellectually, I want to be stimulated. I'm at Vanderbilt. You know, I'm meeting cool people all the time because I work for Jerry Stackhouse, who his association and his network, you never know who you're going to be talking to on a Monday or a Tuesday. Hey, I need you to call this person. You never know who that person is. And so there's so many. And then the guys I get to connect with, our student athletes are high level academically, high level character, high level athletes, and a lot better than I was at 20 and 19. And so there's so many benefits and rewards to what I get to do every day.
For sure. And so you mentioned you wrote 3 books. So you have Signed and you have Dear Assistant Coach. And the last one's Refuse to Lose, correct?
The last one is Refuse to Lose, 7 Steps to Make Adversity Your Advantage. And that's more like a obviously sharing 7 steps, but that's the best thing I've ever created before in my life. The book is the most pride I've ever had in accomplishment before ever. And so it means a whole lot to me. And it came out, I think I was hired like officially on like a May 4th, I get my boxes of books on May 6th. I mean, the way life kind of aligns and works, it's really cool. But both of these opportunities were birthed really at the same time. And, again, you know, selling books, that's what I do.
Special. Now you've used the word adversity like 2 or 3 times. Like in a minute or less, explain, you know, what that word means to you and what you could do with that word. You know, first you wrote a whole book about it, you know, summarize it in a minute for us about what adversity is, you know, to you and how you've benefited from that word.
I mean, what I've had to learn from that word is that the obstacle is the way. Most of us spend a lot of time denying that the obstacle is there, denying that the thing happened, denying that I need to make these adjustments, whatever it might be. And the more we can lean into what's uncomfortable, man, there is a great reward and evolution for us as human beings. We have the capacity to create and do anything. We're built to accomplish great things and pursue our great ideas, right? And we stop ourselves because oftentimes rejection or something from the past or whatever it might be, the list is very long of what could be your adversity. But I would just say it's a benefit. You ask me what adversity is, it's your greatest advantage. It is your greatest advantage. And when you really can embrace that uniqueness in yourself, whatever your particular adversity is, I think there's nothing that we can't do.
For sure. Your behaviors definitely come before your success, and it's not always what happens, but how you respond to it and using it to your advantage. You can kind of spin your brain in any way. Perception is unbelievable. But yeah, the uniqueness in yourself and how you respond to it's big time. So the chief of staff, you're the chief of staff, go by Chief Harris. Chief, made your own title. Why chief of staff? What is it that you do on the daily, that you feel within that role?
Well, I want a chief of staff because it's a versatile role and you couldn't put me in a box. So when you see it on paper, you can't assume a whole lot about what I do other than must be something important, right? And so I wanted to establish that because I didn't know exactly how this was going to play out, what it was going to look like, but I wanted to make sure I took care of myself. And I thought what I could add was tremendous. I thought my value and what I could contribute was tremendous. However, I didn't want to be looked at as a coach. I didn't want to be, nothing against any other position. I didn't want to be in operations. I just didn't want that. I wanted to have a title that could transition. I could be your chief of staff, Brian. You could hire me to be your chief of staff. I could go be the chief of staff for Taylor Swift, or I can build on this title in a different way than a basketball specific title. So I didn't want to be boxed into the sports and athletics world with a title.
Great. So with that role, like, you have one of the largest staffs basically in college basketball. You have a head coach, three assistants, you have a special assistant, general manager, player development, scouting, recruiting, Dobo, assistant Dobo, video, assistant video. You have your trainer, you have your strength coach, and then they have you. So how do you manage all those people? What is it that you do on the daily to allow your coaches to coach and you to do what you do?
So the most important thing is what you just said, right? We got to allow our coaches to coach, particularly our head coach. We got to free up his time. The largest part of my job is not managing all of our people, because we have very qualified people. They don't need to be managed. They don't need to be, we need infrastructures in place. So I support with building infrastructures around certain things. I try to make sure we have a foundation where we can build an academic success plan, or how we communicate with our parents. These are some things that I'm directly over and I oversee, but our marketing, our donor relationships, our alumni relationships, how we do all of those things is very, very important. It reflects, the higher levels you get here at Vanderbilt, you gotta be a 10 at those things. But I think if you're just asking one guy to be in charge of it, which is your head coach, the learning curve is too great when you get a brand new job in a brand new city, in a brand new environment, new culture. You're trying to recruit, you're trying to do 100 other things, and your fan base wants you to win in 3.5 years. That's your lifespan. Like, in 3.5 years, if you ain't got it figured out yet, you got to go. And that's the most unrealistic thing in all of sport. Businesses don't run that way. Hospitals don't run that way. No other industries give you an opportunity. You start from scratch, sometimes the bottom of the mountain, and you got to get it there in 3.5 years. That's 36 months barely, right? So we free up his time. That's the biggest thing I try to do. I try to edify him when he's not around, make sure that he's spoken of and thought of in a great light, but also give him his time back so he can coach basketball, so he can go recruit kids and do the things only he can do. And he's also Jerry Stackhouse, who had a life before Vanderbilt. So he's also got got things, right? So I don't have to do a whole lot of managing of our staff. Our staff is elite. We get a lot of help. Our general manager, Andy Fox, is the college basketball expert. He tells coach what needs to happen behind the scenes as it relates to college athletics. We have a tremendous strength and conditioning coach, Dr. Carlos Daniel, who's on this Zoom right now, who's been at the NBA levels and has tons of experience. And those people don't need anybody, me to manage them, right? My job is more importantly to just continue to communicate and be the optimist in the room. You know, I'm not a coach anymore, so I can have a unique role of just always being positive. Like, I don't ever want to communicate what's not right, what's not going on right, particularly with the players or anything going on with our system. So I try to be positive. I try to celebrate wins. You know, sometimes I think that the nature of my title allows me to say, hey, that was an incredible job. You know, we got great GAs and graduate assistants. They need to hear that's a great job. You guys did great last weekend at the tailgate, or, you know, somebody has a meeting with a recruit or whatever it is, our academic advisor. Sometimes I can step in coach's behalf and communicate that messaging in a way where it still feels real and authentic. And if it needs to go to another level, I say, hey, coach, make sure the nutritionist knows, like, she's doing a great job. You know, so I just have a unique role. But more importantly, I just want to serve every member of our staff, every member of our roster, our student athletes, and make sure things are moving in the right direction. That is my goal.
That's special. And it's something you said in there. You talked about positive communication and, you know, clearing that path and having clarity and just being a positive communicator. And What have you found within that? So, like, coaching, we always think about the negative and things we got to fix this, that, this, that, that. So how do you remain positive through all of it? And, you know, despite losing and not being attached to outcomes and, you know, handling all those things and giving that GA who's busting their butt, but, you know, we point out the one mistake they make rather than the seven things that they're doing right.
Yeah, I think one, I follow my head coach. He does not point out the negative. He does not point out the negative. Most of the time, it's very obvious to everybody, but he's the guy in the room who would never say it until it's appropriate. The environment's appropriate to share that message. He does an incredible job of making every single person who's a part of what we do feel important. He's never going to cuss and yell at a guy in practice, ever. Right. So that's a unique space for me to be in as a coach who's watched coaches be very coachy and ream somebody here. And I was a hot tempered coach. Like, I got my first head coaching job when I was 28 years old. Can you imagine? Like, 28 years old, I'm on fire. I'm cursing everybody out and being very, very dramatic over little things. He's just not that guy. He's not that guy. So it's easy for me to reinforce positivity. He doesn't say, you know, hey, this is great, positive. He's not that high five you every day kind of stuff, but he's definitely never pointing out all the things that are going wrong. He's an extremely glass half full. Long as we don't let the ball go middle, everything will be fine. Okay. Just trust me, you know? So it's easy. It's easy.
With all those people within your staff, how often do you guys meet? Some coaches meet just to meet. Some meet or give a piece of paper or an email. Or how do you effectively communicate with them? And how often do you meet and check up and do different things with your staff?
Yeah. So Coach Stackhouse meets every day before practice with his staff, right? So the coaches, actually everybody who's available. Coaches, one of the things he really liked about adding someone like me was that I know basketball. I'm a basketball fan. So everybody who's a part of what we're doing are basketball people. There's nobody in any role who don't love the game, who doesn't care about whether that ball goes middle or not, right? Even me, the chief of staff, I'm gonna say, like, what's he doing? He's letting the ball go middle. He didn't rotate. He didn't drop his butt to the baseline. Like, I can have that dialogue. And I think that was important to coach when he was building a group of people to take his vision to another level, that he had basketball people. So all of those basketball people meet an hour before practice to talk about what practice is going to be. And he runs that along with the special assistant to the head coach, Nikki Gross, who is like his, if his wife is his right hand, she's his left. And he's communicated that very clearly on a number of occasions. She's handles all of his basketball related needs, technology, information, how we run practice, whatever it might be. But we're all invited to that. And then I have a meeting with our staff. That's a briefing. So we'll meet weekly, right? And we'll brief on housekeeping stuff, just university items. You know, we got to get a CPR certification. Don't park in this lot. This is how we're doing our season tickets. And, you know, like so many things that go on in our program, we'll brief, and then we'll have an academic update in that. And we'll talk about our guys and how they're doing in other areas of what they do. And so I'll hold a meeting once a week. Coach holds a meeting every day about practice.
Yeah, your role brings tremendous value on so many levels to the organization and to basketball in general. And Vanderbilt is very well off financially. You know, in the SEC has good money funding and things like that. And we talked about this a little bit before, where the shift in college basketball, you're dealing with a lot of things, not only in basketball, but in our society. So between COVID, NLI, one-time transfer, you know, our societal shift and different things. And, you know, what do you see the vision of college basketball going towards? You've used the term business. You've used the term high major, power five type stuff. Where do you see more programs adding chief of staff? Do you think it's going to be a trend? Do you think you guys are just 5 years ahead of everybody else? You know, what do you think on that?
I definitely think it'll become, I don't know what the titles will be, chief of staff, right? I mean, there's already the special assistant to the head coach, very common title, but I do believe it's going to become more business oriented. You just have to, it's not, you know, one, there's money to fund it, right? So at this level, Power Five level, there's money to fund it, but there's also so many other pieces to this puzzle. They keep adding to our jobs. You know, you're adding, the mental health element has totally increased. Like if you're really paying attention to that and coaching basketball and going to recruit and developing relationships with alumni, you're missing that. Like, I guarantee you. And so I think these positions will become more necessary. And again, I don't know if it'll be a chief of staff, but it'll be something, a non-basketball coaching position that knows how to manage and run the non-basketball related activities that take place within a program. And there's so many expectations for what we do here, if we're doing it at a high level like we're expected to, or find a new job in 3.5 years.
3.5, crazy. It's a crazy number.
I don't know why I got that from, but it's 3.5 or 4. That's the lifespan. I've done no research.
The kid can't even be in college for that one. Now they're in college for 5 and 6 years. It's wild with people. Unrealistic at times, but at the same time, it's still a business, and we got to adapt, like you said, handle the adversity of what it is.
Well, the fact that it's unrealistic causes people to take drastic measures to fulfill those accomplishments, right? To keep their job. So now you get desperate, and now we have another set of issues and circumstances, which is not beneficial for the sport at any level. So that's my unrealistic. That's where unrealistic kind of hurt you from a character integrity standpoint. Get your back against the wall and people do what they got to do to survive.
It's probably not the most healthy either.
No, it is not. It is not healthy.
You haven't been a head coach on the women's side, and now you've been, you've taken that shift, got out for a couple of years, and then now you're on the men's side, and you guys have a staff with 2 full-time women on it. I think you're probably the only staff in the country that has that. Talk about that for a minute.
Again, I just go back to Coach Stackhouse. The NBA is way more diverse and has way more women in leadership roles than college. College is behind as it relates to diversity from a gender standpoint. You'll find, I mean, women are coaching in the NFL. Right? Like women are coaching in the NFL and women are not coaching in NCAA college basketball, men's basketball. So college, NCAA is behind in that regard. But again, an outside the box person comes in, Coach Stackhouse, who's got more of an MBA knowledge infrastructure, corporate America infrastructure, probably has had a lot of dealings with women, had successful relationships, business relationships with the opposite sex. And so it's not a weird thing for him. It's like, no, this is what I want. I like it like this. And so it starts there. And I don't know when other universities, if other Power Five programs, men's programs will add full-time women, but I think it's an advantage in many ways. I mean, we are yin and yang to each other, right? Like every kid on our team loves their grandmama, loves their mom, like talks about them all the time. Like there's a natural energy that men and women have together to build. And it doesn't matter if it's husband and wife or brother and sister or my best friends are men, like all of them. And they're a part of like my genius tribe. It's not just superficial relationships. It's relationships where I can talk to them, they listen, and vice versa. And we build something together with those two opposite energies. And so, you know, I don't think it's outside the box, but it's also very normal because we've all grown up in a space where, I mean, you got a wife, Brian?
Yep.
There you go. That's your partner. That's your teammate. I mean, you know, she's hopefully she makes you better. She brings something to the table that you don't, and vice versa. And you build something beautiful together. So that's what we do. That's what we're trying to do at Vanderbilt.
That's special. That's awesome. It's actually my wife's birthday today. So after the birthday podcast, I'm going to miss Science of Basketball, even though it's a great thing. I can go back and watch it later. But excited to celebrate with her later. But yeah, keeps me in line, keeps our life in check, and
sure, you
know, allows me to do what I love and
balances you out. The yin and the yang.
For her,
it's human nature. It's human nature.
So if I want to be a chief of staff, and I'm not, I wouldn't say competent enough, but I would say, let's say I'm not going to write a book, and it's not going to fall into a Hall of Fame player and coach, and you know, big time name. Human being that seems like an unbelievable person to work for, and you've edified him very well. And I think that's awesome. How can you get into that? How can we help move this needle? How can we, you know, shift college basketball?
I don't know. I think it's going to start, you know, it's going to start at the Power Five level and trickle down. But I don't even know, like everything. When I was in college, we did not have a Dobo. We did not have a video coordinator. We barely had a strength and conditioning coach that worked 12 months of the year. When I got my first job, we did not have a third assistant. We did not have a Dobo. Like, so these things had to trickle down, right? Slowly. And I don't know when it's going to trickle down. Because the gap it seems like it's getting larger between what's happening with the SEC, for example, versus what's happening with Conference USA, even like the gap is just continuing to grow. So to answer your question, I don't know if it'll trickle down. I don't know when it'll trickle down. We may be 20 years ahead of, you know, if it'll trickle down to, you know, UNC Asheville, where I coached, you know, in 2003. So I don't know. I think being a head coach though, a head coach is an advantage. So I would say that, like, you want to contribute to another head coach at a high level, go get the experience. Go get the experience and know how to do every single thing from A to Z, run a program, schedule events, run camp, order equipment, order hotels or make hotel reservations, get the bus, like get the charter plane, know how to do every single thing. And you add value. You solve a problem. You're the answer to somebody's question or somebody's problem. And that's what you want to be in any role, chief of staff, Dobo, video coordinator, sports communication, graphics, creative design, all those fancy positions for what we post on Instagram. I mean, just be the answer to somebody's problems.
Sometimes your greatest strength is that you're very diverse, you know, very diverse with so many different roles. And I hear that, you know, especially being a JUCO coach, you know, we do everything. And I'm very fortunate to have a very large staff and have three assistant coaches that bust their butt for me. But it's a challenge. It's a challenge every day, managing those people, learning everything. And, you know, things don't always go your way. You got this platform right now, you know, with the podcast. And are there any questions that you want me to ask, you know, that maybe you want to go in a certain direction with your job title or basketball or, you know, your journey or anything specific that you want to dive into?
No, I mean, I think that what's really important to me is being a good person. You know, that can get lost in all the title stuff. You know, you take the title away, you can call me whatever you want, but you're going to call me a good person. You're going to call me high character. You're not going to call me a cheater. You're not going to say that, hey, I was trying to manipulate this situation to get to this situation. I think that's value in that. I think it's paid off in a way where now that I'm at Vanderbilt, I can see through a different lens how valuable it is. And I think if I'm a young coach right now, you got to make up your mind what side of the street you're going to play on. And if you want to play dirty, you go play dirty. That's fine. And if you want to do it the right way, and you want to play clean and have the long route or run the marathon because you're a lifer and you love this thing and you're going to have fun, whether you're a JUCO coach, a D2 coach, or I'm having just as much fun as if I was, you know, assistant coach at UNC Asheville in 2003. Like, you know, there's nothing more rewarding than the place you're at. And so I wouldn't start overlooking where I am because I want to go somewhere else, because happiness is not over there. It's where you are. And so I would say that, you know, decide what type of person you're going to be when you get in here, because you're going back against the wall. People make decisions, and you got to decide early on before you get your back against the wall. Who am I going to be when it gets really tough? You know, when the fans hate me, they talk bad about my coach, or my coach is on my neck. You know, I'm an assistant coach or support staff member. My coach is down my neck, or I feel like I'm being mistreated. Who am I going to be? Am I going to lash out? Am I going to do something that's going to compromise the integrity of the university or something bigger than myself? Right. I think having a strategy of how you're going to deal with adversity, tough times before you get there, is very, very important, because you're going to have tough times in this profession. You're going to have tough times.
Yeah. I love to say that you control your own happiness. Like, if you have your health, you have everything, but you control your own happiness and where those feet are. And, you know, you talked, I don't know if it's necessarily your specific core value, but being a good person, having high character, humility, not about you type stuff, is you can sense the passion that you have behind that. And like you said, you know, going down that right road is a decision you had to make, and you live with every decision that you make.
Yeah. I'm gonna add one thing. You got to watch who you admire, because you'll start mimicking them without knowing. You know, this college coaching profession has so many people we can glorify because they're on TV, or they won so many national championships, or this person got this job and his logo looks fancier now, so now he's the man. Or you got to watch who you admire and why you admire them. And if it's just because they got to a place, just keep watching the journey, because you gotta realize who's gonna last in the end. You know, I've seen a lot of, I've been around long enough now, I've seen a lot of coaches got hot 2 years, 4 years, 5 years. Then all of a sudden it all comes crumbling down because some sort of integrity issue on the back end, or a character flaw that wasn't revealed early on, but they would do anything to get to the top. And so I challenge people to just watch who you look up to and who you admire, because you will subconsciously begin to mimic some of those behaviors without knowing. And I'm fortunate. My first boss was a stickler for rules. She was a stickler for being on time and dressing for the role and doing things the right way. And I think I was very impressionable as a young person. I would have, you know, at 22 years old, if my first boss would have cut corners and cheated and thought we needed to do it another way to be successful, I'm afraid I would have maybe visited some of those things and had the challenge of that, but I never did. And so I'm just fortunate that I had a boss who worked with high level integrity and character.
Who else would you say, if you had to throw another couple names out there, of somebody that you idolize or admire?
Well, my first coach, his name is Dana Conte. It's a girl's name, but it's really a guy. His name's Dana Conte. He was my first AAU coach, 10 years old. I played AAU, and he's my mentor now. We go to lunch every time I'm in town, to go to dinner. He just means everything to me, everything to me. He told me, I grew up in an environment where my mom wasn't able to take me to practice, and she wasn't able to take me to AAU tournaments and all this stuff. She wasn't able to be available in that way. She had to work three jobs, and I never had a father who really gave a shit about whether I could dribble or shoot or not. And so it really relied on my village, people in my community that came in and helped me. And so, but he is one that told me when I was 10 years old, he said, he dropped me off at home after an AAU tournament in Raleigh, North Carolina. I never forget it. And he said, I always sit in the back seat and be really, really quiet. and never say anything the whole ride and get home. And he's like, well, look, if you want to keep, the season was over. So this is going to be the last AAU tournament. You know, you want to play, you want to keep getting better. Just call me and I go to the Y every day after work. I'll come pick you up. And I called him every day for 6 years to come pick me up and take me to the Y when I wasn't in my high school or middle school season. And I think the fact that he showed up every single day to pick me up, this kid picked me up from my home to, and he's 21 year old, just out of college, you know, like bachelor life. And he's worried about me. And so that's my first mentor, somebody who cared about serving other people. And you could see my mom was working 3 jobs, but I had some potential or some talent, and maybe being out of my home was the best thing for me. So I think there's no greater person I admire in this coaching profession than him.
Special. We need more people like that, definitely in our world, especially, you know, to take people under the wing, have each other's back, and you know, that's special. And it's even nice even to hear how grateful you are. And
so great. I mean, it's transformed my life. Look at me. Are you serious? Look at me. Like, I'm chief of staff at Vanderbilt because of some actions that he helped make and things he put in place and seeds that were planted and nurtured, you know, when I was like a 10-year-old girl. So yeah, I mean, people can have an impact on other people.
For sure, for sure. So I just got a DM from one of our workers within the Rising Coaches. She keeps us organized. Her name is
Catherine. There you go.
She's at the University of Minnesota, but she's going to hop on. She's going to ask us an impactful question. Go for it, Erin.
Hi, Adele. Thank you so much for joining us and being a part of this, especially as a female in this industry. It's like so incredible and enlightening to hear you speak. So a quick question, kind of what you just hit on, really, I think is a theme in kind of my nervousness about being in the coaching industry and kind of really stepping into that. I just accepted a role at Minnesota, so this is my first real kind of out in the real world kind of thing. But thank you. Yeah, it's been incredible. But with kind of like, how do you navigate knowing who to really admire, who to surround yourself with? I think a fear for me, my like playing career didn't necessarily go the greatest with coaches that and ended up transferring. But you never know who people are and kind of their background and where they come from. And so I think now professionally, that's like a hesitation for me getting into the coaching industry and things like that. Thankfully, the University of Minnesota women's basketball staff is top notch. They are some of the most incredible women I've ever met in my entire life. But that obviously won't be forever. And I'll need to, you know, kind of get pushed out and be on my own eventually and get a coaching job and things like that. But how do you really navigate like not knowing who people are and what their intentions are until you're maybe on staff with them or working side by side with them and then kind of figuring it out the hard way?
Yeah, how many years have you been out of college?
I just finished my master's degree in the spring. Okay. And I did it right after college. So I graduated 2019, finished my master's degree in 2 years. COVID obviously kind of happened. Yeah. And then this is my first time being on a staff.
Yeah, well, let me say this first. Congratulations, Erin. And thank you for the question. First thing I would say is that good people attract good people. Right. So you be who you want to attract. That would be the first thing I say. It's all inward. Right. You're going to attract the right people into your journey that are going to add value, that are going to take you from step two to step four. And then maybe they're not able to take you from 4 to 6. But, you know, you're going to meet your tribe. You're going to meet the right people. I promise you that. But the other thing, you're in a great situation. Right. So you're young, you're just starting out and you're already landed with one of the best women's basketball players ever. Right. And a highly successful individual. And so I wouldn't say that's not going to last forever. I would say be the type of person that adds value to her journey and vision as the head coach. You work for Lindsay Whalen?
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So be the type of person that adds value to her and her journey and what she's trying to do at Minnesota. And you never know what types of circles you'll end up in. You don't know what type of people you're going to end up in. You're in a great situation. You'll meet the right people. Don't force it. That's important. Don't force it. Don't follow logos and titles. I don't care if they're chief of staff at anywhere. I think everybody has something they can teach you, but before you jump on somebody's bandwagon and, you know, start to like, you're my, I admire you. You're my, you know, you got a great staff that you can probably admire. You know, you got some good folks around you that you can watch work every day and let their actions teach you who they really are. But I would say you be the person you want to attract. And then, you know, one of the things I do affirmations, Aaron. And one of the things that I say all the time out loud is guide me to my excellence and bring me my genius tribe. I want to attract the genius level tribe. Financially, spiritually, professionally, I want genius level, high level people in my space at all times. And I think that energy is going to produce some things and manifest some things in your life. That's what I would say.
That was great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, good luck to you, Aaron.
Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron, for the question. We got one more question. Our CEO, he's back on. He's locked in. He's engaged. He's over there. Adam, go ahead, bud.
Yeah, thanks, Coach Bender, and thanks, Adele. This has been great. My question is, moving into the role that you're in now, and like you mentioned, not having to worry about coaching the team and recruiting and this and that, I would imagine like allows you to be, you know, hyper-focused and specialize on some things and get ahead of the curve on some things. I'm just curious, like what, I know you mentioned mental health, you mentioned NIL, but like, what do you think you've really been able to like be forward thinking on and kind of, you know, you mentioned wanted to attract genius and it seems like you like being on the cutting edge. So I'm just wondering what you've untapped given the freedom of your role.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think we're able to get ahead in a lot of areas because of the manpower we have, right? Like as it relates to, you know, just technology. I have a whole staff and team that does that. And I don't have to be involved with that at all. That's not my lane. But I think we're at a high level there, looking to do new things, social media and how we brand and market ourselves and things of that nature. I don't know if I'm doing anything to get us ahead. I think I'm always trying to make sure we're knowledgeable of all the changes that are taking place, transfer portal, and you know, what do we need to do to retain the guys that we want to be here? You know, in a time where you can get up and leave, you know, other universities, they call your kids, they recruit them. It's open market now. It's a very crazy thing. I'm just thinking about things that are on my mind a lot. You know, are we doing what we need to do now to continue to recruit the guys that we have on the roster? So that when the time comes at the end of the year, there's no question where they want to be. They want to be here. They want to be with us. We've taken care of them. We've crossed the T's and dotted the I's on relationships with their parents and just making sure we know what we need to know about these kids when those opportunities present themselves, which they are very likely to. So, yeah, there's a lot though. I mean, name, image, likeness, transfer portals. I try to make sure our head coach knows who he needs to know in Nashville, just from an alumni standpoint. And our stakeholders are so important. As you can imagine, a lot of fan bases are very passionate. You know, they really care. And so Vanderbilt University is no different. And we got to know those people. We got to build trusting relationships with them. We got to build allies around Nashville and on campus even. And so as much as we can do to make sure that those relationships strong, those people feel seen. Again, that's something I try to make sure we do. But COVID was tough. We're going into year three. We essentially only had like 7 months to really get out and connect with people. So now we're going into year three and that's a huge focus of mine, stakeholders.
Thanks, Adele.
Thanks for the question, Adam. So it looks like we've got about 2 minutes left. One of my favorite questions and, you know, like what I like to do is try and take action, you know? So Adele, you've given us a lot of really good nuggets and some stuff that not only me as a head coach, but everyone on this call or podcast is able to take with us. So send us home with, you know, one thing or a challenge or something we could take action on here in the next 24 hours.
Yeah, I would write down, I love writing notes. So you see here, I got journals, I got notes for days, but I would write down what I want out of this profession. You know, what am I doing? What do I want to be? What's the long game, right? I'm climbing this mountain. So when I get to the top, what is that? Is that D2 head coach? Is that Division I head coach? Is that assistant coach for life? Is that support role for life? Is that, you know, I want to create my own position. Right now, we're in a space where you can probably create your own position. And maybe I'm the name, image, likeness guru that comes in and I'm like able to build all these relationships with corporate partners. And I have no idea what it is, but I would put that in writing and then also write down what you're going to sacrifice to get there, because you're going to sacrifice some things. And so what are you willing to sacrifice and what are you not willing? You know, I'm not willing to sacrifice my relationship with my parents or my, you know, my relationship with my kids or whatever it might be. And then you got to decide, you know, who you're going to be. And I think actions become easier to take once you know and you have clarity on exactly what I want to do and where I want to be.
Super powerful. That's phenomenal stuff right there. And taking the action and doing it. It's one thing to say it, but you got to do it and write it down, and you're going to be more successful if you write things down and take it with you. So yeah. I really appreciate your time. I know you had a long day and had a lot go on throughout your week, I'm sure. And but really, really am appreciative of your time. And like you said, you know, anybody, your time is your most valuable asset in how you use it. And you were able to spend it with us and impact other people, which I know you love to do. And you know, we really enjoyed having you, and I'm sure we'll touch base again and kind of go from there. So
sure. Thank you guys. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Adam. And we'll be in touch and anchor down. And whoever from Dayton said, take care of Rodney. I got him.
He's the best. I love Rodney Chapman.